Hi, I'm Leola. I'm a sacred intimacy mentor and muse and the host of this podcast. Talk Tantra to Me introduces a playful perspective on sacred sexuality. My intention in this podcast is to integrate intimacy and spirituality, empowering you to reclaim your eroticism. It is my mission to inspire you to let go of shame, fear, and limiting beliefs to be present as your highest self in every moment. Thanks so much for tuning in. Now, let's talk Tantra. Hello, lovers. I am so blessed and honored to be in a position to share, you know, tools and tips and tricks that have the potential to heal and to bring you to a place of full sexual embodiment. And one of the tools that I absolutely love and have been using for the better part of a decade are crystal yoni products, including pleasure wands and yoni eggs. And I was so excited to recently come across a brand called Wands, W-A-A-N-D-S. I met the founder here in Austin and I absolutely loved who she was. I love getting to know the people behind the products that I like to use. And I just loved her mission to really support women and men to explore, celebrate, and honor their sexuality. I felt this transmission of slow sensual seduction in all of who she was and all that she brought to the world. So I went ahead and gave it a try. I purchased a blue quartz amarita wand, and the amarita wand is great because it has this like a cool bulby end on it, which is designed for G-spot and cervical stimulation, but can also be used for prostate stimulation. So it's great for men and women and can even be used between partners. So I'm so honored to have built this relationship with her and to be able to offer you guys an amazing discount code. So if you use the code Leola, L-E-O-L-A, that will give you 15% off all products. And the website is wands.com, W-A-A-N-D-S.com. And we'll go ahead and link that in the show notes as well for you. So thank you so much for listening. And also you're welcome for the inevitable pleasure and healing and ecstasy that is coming your way with these products. Let's dive into the episode. Alrighty, folks, welcome to Talk Tantra to Me. It is such an honor to be holding space for this divine knowledge to make its way into your ears and lifestyle. Today, back on the podcast, I have this beautiful man, my husband, Andrew Lloyd Watkins.
Hi.
Howdy. He's been on the podcast numerous times. Honestly, we're getting to the point where it's too many to mention, but lots of great episodes. Anything that ends with Andrew is with Andrew, if that makes sense.
It's funny how that works.
Yeah. Recent episodes include We Got Married and Chlamydia.
Question mark.
What else? We had a threesome. Those were, I think, two of our most recent episodes.
Those were our recent episodes. Also, revelation. I think you should start calling that instead of with Andrew, it's with Mr. Talk Tantra to Me.
Talk Tantra to Me with Mr. Talk Tantra to Me. Little wordy, babe.
Is that a little too much?
I think so.
Okay.
But I like it. I like that you desire that.
I mean, endearing and I am a little much sometimes. So
it's true. As am I.
It tracks.
I also want to preface this by saying that Andrew and I had a little scuffle before recording today.
We did? That was not a scuffle.
How would you?
That was adorable, is what it was.
I think scuffle is adorable. Scuffle sounds adorable.
It does. It kind of sounds like a light fight, but it wasn't even in fight territory. So if you all have been following the pod for a while now, you probably heard the story of when I wanted to take Leola to church, and she came out in her sex priestess dress, and I threw a hissy fit and was like, well, I'm not going to church if you're dressing like that. And then I didn't. But then I did.
I'm going to pull up the number quickly.
Yeah. Go ahead and pull that up.
Keep telling the story while I pull it up.
So what goes around comes around, and karma is a bitch, my lady, because As you may or may not be able to see from the video underneath this leopard pillow, I am wearing sweatshorts, maroon sweat comfy shorts. I wear these sweatshorts pretty much every day. Not these specific ones, but I have like four that I cycle through. And I was coming to record the pod and Leola asked if I could change. And I said something very similar to what she said for me when I asked her to change for church. And I said, this is me and your viewers will accept me for me, or we can get different. We need different viewers.
So the episode, thank you guys for your patience with me pulling this up. The episode is High Vibe Relating. There's part one and part two, episodes 97 and 98. But yeah, completely different. Different,
exactly the same,
different experience,
exactly
entirely.
The same thing.
In my opinion, I think that there's a level of like communicating who you are, and what you're communicating in this outfit, in my perspective, is not I'm a rad sex priestess that's here to liberate the world. It's like I'm a little bit sloppy. And I was like, whatever, cool. What, like what, you rock with it. Let's just fucking record.
I'm going to interrupt you here. We're talking over each other. but I will, what I'm communicating is that I am a normal dude who is also in the space, who enjoys his comfort and also enjoys being authentically himself.
Yeah, but you also are authentically yourself in like a beautiful suit and like so many other amazing outfits. And I would like for you to choose that version of yourself in the future when we're recording podcasts. And I am okay with it this time.
You hear that, folks? So that was actually the rallying cry for me to wear nothing but sweatshorts every time you see me from here on out.
All right. He's laid it down.
Love you, babe.
We decided as we were having this disagreement, I was like, I guess we need to bring this into the podcast, make a little full circle moment. Cause that was about a year ago that we went to church.
It was about a year ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here we are.
You got to pick your battles, guys. And I'm not going to pick the battle of sweatshorts, but I will make an example of it.
You're not going to die on this hill, sweatshirt hill?
There are other hills that I will die on, and this is not one.
What's the hill that you'll die on?
I know it when I see it, babe. I can't just like pull it out of my butthole.
I know what hill you would die on. I know one of them.
Tell me.
Puppies.
I will die on the hill of puppies.
You will die on puppy hill.
I will. Yep. If you guys remember from a recent episode as well, there was a hill called the Louis Vuitton bag, the wife bag. And I still don't have that bag because I chose not to die on that hill. But I did choose to really stick my stake in the ground on the puppy hill, and we are getting a puppy in a week.
Here's the thing. It's like, I think that in relationships, if it's not like work towards a yes for both parties, otherwise it's like default no. And the puppy was a yes for me. I was just afraid of how much work it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, thinking about it a little bit deeper with what Leola and I both want out of this marriage and family, is this will be the only time possibly ever in our entire marriage where it will just be you and I.
And for sure, at least for a very long time, it's possible that that will happen again, but it will never be the same. Because when we have children, even when they're out of the house, we still have them and we still will be worried about them and want the best for them probably until the day we die.
Yep. And there's no way that our kids are going to leave the house and we, one, don't already have a dog. And then two, if we don't have a dog, aren't getting a dog almost immediately once they leave. And so it's like, whoa, this is a really special time. Mm-hmm. You and I alone together. There's another hill I think you would die on.
What is that hill?
It's also Baby Hill. And that's another one. I mean, that's one that we cleared up before we even got like together. We both wanted a family. That one's easy. And then, another hill that I think that you would die on And I think this isn't unique to this relationship. I just think this is a part of who you are. And I think this is like deeply, deeply, deeply feminine trait, which is awesome, is like not putting up with when like I am doing less than my like potential.
Yeah. Do you want to share with the listeners your little breakthrough on that? We haven't even gotten into what this episode is about yet, and I love it, but do you want to share your little breakthrough on that that happened this week?
Yeah. So a fear I have in this relationship is that, okay, like I do a great job of providing for us now, and what happens if like that's no longer enough? Mm-hmm. Right. And so in my man brain, I'm like, okay, so if I can provide like this nice of a house now, what happens when that bar gets raised and it's no longer like this house, it'll be like another house that's even better and bigger and badder. And like, what happens if I can't meet that bar? And I was expressing this to another friend of mine who is also a woman. And she was like, silly, silly man brain, thinking in things of terms of like the size of houses and or number of houses or whatever. That's not what we care about. And this is going to circle back all the way to the beginning, so we'll be repeating ourselves. What we care about is if you're actually like doing what we know you can do.
Yeah.
And living up to who we know you are. And if you're actually giving it your best and really putting it into the relationship and into the family, like the rest is almost moot.
And I love that she said that, because I've never intellectualized that truth, but it rings so true for me. This isn't the first relationship that I've been in which the man has been like, wow, you want a lot, and what if you change your mind and you want something different, or your desires evolve? And like, that's just a given. Like right now I have everything I've ever wanted. And guess what? I have a whole new list of wants, you know? And so that's always going to be evolving. But the reality that my desire is just to live to the fullest and to see that in you as well. And as long as you're in alignment with that, that's really what it's about for me. It's less about what the things are and what it looks like, and more about the expression.
It's like Leola is an extension of my own conscience. Mm-hmm. Where I know when I'm like kind of like giving it like 75% because that's more than good enough.
You know what one could argue? Your outfit is you giving it 75%.
Incorrect.
I was really just trying this to call actu- you.
This is actually, this, babe, we're going to talk over each other again. This is actually 100,000% is me in these sweat shorts right now. And it being authentically me. Actually, the shadow would be actually me getting all fancy and dressed up to like, quote unquote, impress the audience. That's actually more. Like, that's actually like, that's also a part of me, and I love that part of me, and it's also a part that can be worked on, and this is part of the working on it, so you're welcome.
Yeah, and that's part of why I didn't decide to die on that hill. I decided to let you have this moment, and
you hear that? You hear that, ladies and gentlemen? Let me have this moment. Let me have it. Do you hear that, y'all? Oh my gosh, I feel like we just got a little bit of your shadowiness right there. Little tidbit, a little bite. You want to dig into that a little bit? No?
you want to continue? Go ahead. What are you going to say?
Oh, I wanted you to expound upon it.
You actually cut me off, and now I don't even remember what I was going to say. And that's why I was trying to speak, and then you really wanted to speak, so I let you speak, so we weren't speaking over each other, and now I don't, I lost it, so.
Yeah, I can provide clarity. If
I think I'm
useful.
Complete with this. I think I'd like to actually get into the episode now. Which is, we asked the following, the Instagram worlds, to submit questions for a Q&A. So I've done lots of Q&As on the podcast before, but this is my first time doing it with Andrew as a guest. And we got lots of really juicy submissions. I'm really excited to read through them and to expand on them together in this space. You ready to get into them?
Let's do it. I was thinking of like a really like snappy comment, like joke, or and it totally farted in my brain. So,
guys, it's also like end of work day. We're recording this after both of us have been on a few calls.
No excuses.
But, we're dropping in, and yeah, it's great. All right. So I'm doing this in completely random order, but the first one that I'm feeling called to is OnlyFans ? Would you guys ever start an OnlyFans?
It's a hard no for me. So this is not a criticism of OnlyFans. This isn't an indictment of anyone who does OnlyFans. We have friends that are on OnlyFans.
People we love.
People we love very deeply on OnlyFans. And this is just for Leola and I. So we'll do a big old like preamble there and preface and asterisks and whatever else you want to call it. That for me, putting that kind of stuff, like our sexual intimacy up, on to be consumed, for me, I don't want to mix those two things. For me, it would be, I am taking this really important part of my life that I share with Leola and then having it become a performance. Mm-hmm. And also for me, that's already something that I need to watch anyway, is other parts of my life being kind of a performance. That's a bit of the shadow of the magician and the performer bit in me. And doing that and then attaching that to our incomes, it's like the incentives are just not aligned for my maximum well-being and mental health.
And it is something that we actually considered and talked about seriously when I don't know if you remember this, mm-hmm, but
I do.
About a year ago on Andrew's birthday trip, we recorded some spicy stuff for fun. We were on vacation and we got some great content, some sexual stuff. And we actually talked about it. And I was like, look, like I could have been on OnlyFans for years and years. It's not something that I just really feel called to do, nor do I desire to do. I have friends that do it and they love it and they make a lot of money and it's all great and fine and well. It just isn't fun for me. It isn't fun to be like editing this stuff and like talking to, you know, people that are really charged online about it. It's just like, oh, like it just doesn't sound fun for me. And I wish that it did, because I would like to make lots of money online, and I do in many ways. It didn't really mean anything. I was like, I would really just be doing it probably for the money, and maybe I would bring in some like, here's tantric way of doing OnlyFans sex stuff, you know. But it wouldn't, like, I have no desire to like run an OnlyFans. Like, that's the main resistance for me. And I think for you, you had mentioned that it actually kind of turned you on, the idea of like other people watching us and like watching our content and all that stuff. But it was also a thing of like for work purposes and things like that. For you, it's a no. And I don't think that you also, I think, are not really wanting to run it. So it would be a thing where we would just like have someone else run it if we ever did do it, which we're not going to.
Yeah, the work thing is definitely there too. I don't think I could do those two at the same time. For like in it, with any degree of success in either direction. And I really love what I do. But that's really secondary to the first comment. Is like, I don't want to bring my performance life into my sexual intimacy.
Yeah, it's not, I think that's definitely a big piece, is that then it like so much of like the things that I love I've already made into work. And I think it's a really Capricorn quality, like to make your hobbies make money. And so, you know, that sounds great on the surface. And I think that, yeah, keeping it really special between us just feels really right and good. But I love OnlyFans. I think it's incredible. I think that it's like there's so much more ethical. It's just more ethical than probably
5% of porn on the internet, because it's the money that is being spent is going directly to the creator rather than to some production company and all those things. And I think that OnlyFans is really powerful in that way.
Agreed.
All right. Shall we go to the next question?
Next question, please.
Tips for moving from the crunchy moments during / after conflict back into connection, especially when the conflict can't be solved. So I will preface this by saying that in the Higher Love Club last month, the theme was conscious conflict. So there's so much good juice on conflict in relationships, in friendships, in workplaces, etc. In that module. And as soon as you join the Higher Love Club, you get access to all of that. But what would you say to this? Also, sorry, one more thing. Andrew also guest taught in the Higher Love Club that month. He doesn't always, but there's a little special extra bit.
Oh. So this isn't, you know, my idea or strategy. I borrowed this. I forget the source. And it's going to seem obvious once I say it. But the motivation to do it is not as obvious. So I'll share both.
Okay.
So there's in every, almost every argument that I've had, there's a moment when my higher self or my conscience or whatever you want to call it, God, it doesn't really matter, kicks in and goes, is this how you really want to be right now with this human that you've dedicated your life to, or this amount of time to, or have committed to, or whatever, this human in your life, or even stranger on the street, actually. And then there's a bit of a choice point there to continue being angry and acting angry and saying things I don't really want to say, or being ways that I don't really want to be, or coming back to love. And sometimes the answer to that question is no, fuck that. I'm going to still be angry and act this way. And sometimes it's like, no, I'm going to come back to love. And here's something that has helped me come back to love. And this was in one of the marriage books that Leol and I read. Maybe you'll know which one it is after I say it. And it goes, well, who's the person that comes back to love? If this person's being like this and they keep being like this, or and I'm like this and keep being, who's going to be the one? And the book says, the most mature one.
Such a good line. Do you want to be the mature one, or, you know, do you want to be the one still cycling in the drama?
And that really kind of nudged me in a direction that was really, really a lot more skillful. And so there was a couple strategies there. One is asking that question. But in order to have asked that question in the first place, I get to build awareness over what's happening to even create that space to say, no, I'm going to still be fucking angry in the first place. Otherwise, there's no choice. Mm-hmm. I'm just reacting and will continue to react. And I'll screw it up, and I'll screw it up probably next week, but it's about progress, not perfection. So to summarize and distill the answer to that question, at least from my perspective, is it's actually very simple, is, am I going to be the one, am I going to be the change that I want to see in this moment and in this relationship, regardless of how the other person is being or doing?
Yeah. And what can that change look like? I think that one thing that is super underrated is maybe having a little bit of spaciousness, not forcing the connection to happen immediately. That's something that I used to I tend to run a bit anxious and have a little bit of anxious attachment. So when there is conflict and my partner needs spaciousness, or it's clear that we're not getting anywhere with the conflict, to have spaciousness can be used to feel really dysregulating for me, because it was like, well, what's going to happen when we take space? He can convince himself that this isn't the right relationship. I need to be here. We need to fix it right now. You know, all of these stories would come up, and it's taken a lot of healing my own relationship to my anxiety and my safety and my worthiness to get to a place of realizing that sometimes you just shouldn't force the connection in that moment, create some spaciousness, and then come back to it. With both individuals being in a more regulated space to come back to love. And I will also say that to me, like, one of the most helpful things is just physically getting closer together. Can you be the one, like, even though it's, you know, you're in the conflict, to reach out and to ask for a hug, or to ask to hold your partner, or to just co-regulate in a way and trust that whatever the conflict is, the solution will come, or the relationship will evolve using the tools that, you know, you have to communicate effectively. And again, in the Higher Love Club, there's a bunch of fucking tools for you.
There's a second part of that question that I think they want more context on too. I don't know how useful I'm going to be with that one. Mm-hmm. And that is especially with things that, that they can't resolve. What was the second piece?
Especially when conflict can't be solved.
I don't agree with that personally, but maybe this is semantics, but it's like, even if we have a disagreement and neither of us will see, like we just fundamentally disagree on a particular issue. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that the conflict can't be resolved. I don't subscribe to that there being conflict in a relationship that is unresolvable.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there could be a different perspective that will never reach eye to eye or, you know, become one. But the tension can definitely be evolved or eliminated.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's important to have that, we might talk about this earlier, that baseline heuristic of, if we are not in a, if we can't reach agreement, the default is no, it's not happening.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's a forcing function for us to find a way to make it work.
They say you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And this is something that I really, really resonate with. And as I've invested in living a tantric lifestyle, my relationships have evolved and become so much more juicy and liberating. And I believe that this is something that everyone deserves. However, finding these people can be a little bit challenging at first. And so it is my mission to create more spaces for people to find individuals that are resonant with a tantric lifestyle, that are really resonant with you, the listener, the person who is investing their time into living a life that is expansive and liberating. So with that, I'm committed to creating more and more safe spaces for people to discover their desires and practice their boundaries, to connect in community, to celebrate and to grow together, so that we can all step into a more authentic version of ourselves and experience truly unconditional love. So we have tantra retreats, retreats for men, women, couples, singles. We also have female-only retreats, just for the ladies stepping into their divine feminine. We have play parties. We have tantra workshops, tantra yoga, women's circles. We've got all kinds of really powerful in-person events. You can find all the details at www.talktantratome.com/events. You can also just go to talktantratome.com and click the events tab to find out about all the latest and the greatest. And if you're wanting me all to yourself, I can't blame you. I also host private retreats for both individuals and couples. Those are one-on-one. You get me all to yourself. And I'm available for private tantra workshops and performances. And this is great for events like your birthday or maybe a bachelorette party or bachelor weekend. We can talk and create something that will be extra special just for you. So I cannot wait to connect with you in real life. But for now, thanks so much for your patience with this brief interruption, and let's get back to the episode.
All right, next question. This is a good one, a good, funny, but great one in a way. How to teach my girl to moan like hentai cartoon Japanese porn actress, feminine and high pitched. I first want to just say to this individual, thank you for just owning your desire. And that takes a lot of courage. And the way that you bring that desire to your partner.
Can we pause for a second? Because this is either a troll or a genuine request. And we can acknowledge both.
I think either way, like my initial reaction was like, what the fuck? And then I was like, oh my God, am I judging his desire? And I had a moment of being like, oh my God, because I think that there's actually a lot of juiciness to the question. It's not about the hentai, whatever. It's about how do you ask for what you want? Like that's the question under the question.
Yeah. If it's not a troll, which I'm happy to like, if it is not a troll, you just hit the nail on the head. If it is a troll, we're still going to answer it because I think it's a fucking great question.
All right.
So how do you ask for what you want?
Yeah.
Again, this is going to seem really obvious on its face. I had a mentor a long time ago that told me that one of the most effective ways to get what I want is to ask for it. And I'm like, well, no shit. Yeah. Like there is nuance and subtlety to that statement. It's actually pretty profound. One, it's a laser getting right to the thing. And two, you're like, well, what if they say no? Now we're talking, right? Because the real skill isn't the asking in and of itself of what I want. And there's a bunch of like persuasion books you can read to like enable like in one direction or the other, but that's all besides the point. The real juiciness of the skill is practicing the risk and handling that fear or that anxiety or that possibility of rejection so that over time, the bosses of asking for what I want become bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. I'll give you an example. When I was a kid, I used to be afraid to call the Chinese food place and order from their menu. That I would like, that's how much. And I was like, what I'm saying is I was afraid to ask people that has a phone line so that people can call, so I can give them money so they can bring me food. That's why it exists. And I was still anxious to ask for the thing that I wanted.
Even though they are like, that's what it's there for, is to receive your request.
Exactly.
Still afraid to make the request.
Exactly. Right. And so that's how it was. And there's still plenty of room to grow for asking for what I want, but that almost seems like ridiculous now. Mm-hmm. And so the real beauty isn't just in the asking for what I want. It is building the courage and the skill and the muscle to risk someone saying no.
Yeah. And I'll add to this, whether you're requesting your partner to act like a certain character or cartoon or whatever, or you're requesting them to just have regular vanilla sex or give you a blowjob, or like no matter what it is in the bedroom, I think that it's important to acknowledge that there's a lot of collective fear and shame about both stating requests and speaking requests, especially in the bedroom, because of the we've been conditioned from a young age that like this happens behind closed doors in the dark. Don't talk about it. It's wrong. It's bad. It's only okay with a partner, with a husband or wife or whatever. There's been all these rules. And so and a lot of sexual acts have been illegal in many cases, or, you know, are condemned in the Bible or in various religions. And so I think just acknowledging that if you can ask for what you want in the bedroom, like imagine the doors that opens to the rest of your life and your ability to ask for what you want. So this is a really great thing to practice. But when you are making the request, if it is something that feels vulnerable or hard to request, being in your heart and being very genuine about how complicated it is for you to make that request, to say something like, I really have something I'd like to ask for from you. And I want to let you know that I'm feeling a little bit of nervousness and fear that you're going to judge me for having this request. Like prefacing it with something like that can be really powerful to just like oil the greases, to prime things up and to prepare your partner to receive something that they also might be triggered by as well. And recognizing that even if you receive a no or a redirection away from the request or the desire that you've made, giving your partner a lot of grace in that, because there could be a million reasons why they're a no to that. And it could be just a genuine no, or it could be because they have their own stories about the request that you're making. So really giving a lot of grace and getting curious about what is true and what's coming up around the request as well.
Yeah, it's really not about their reaction at the end of the day. It's about practicing the skill of asking for what I want. And then pro tip, if, and this just helps grease the grooves with kind of any sexual request, is if you have the ability to make your partner so horny that they like can't even remember their name, pretty much any request is going to be a thumbs up.
And how do you do that? How do you get them?
We need an entire other podcast.
We should do another podcast about that.
We should. That there's way too much information there. Yeah.
All right. We'll take a note of that.
The long and short of that is fucking pay attention to nonverbal cues.
Yeah.
Listen to her body.
There could be a whole masterclass on that.
Yeah.
You ready to teach that, Bim? Andrew's an immaculate lover.
Thanks, babe.
Moving on.
Let's do it.
All right. Yeah. So when doing Tantra with a group, do you guys always do practices together or not, combination? Okay, so I ended up messaging this individual to ask for more context. So I was like, what do you mean? And the context that she shared was that her and her partner they've been married for a while. They've been opening up. They've been kind of beginning to explore sexually beyond the realms of their container. And she was asking, do you like at our play parties or at our Tantra retreats or whatever, like, are we always doing exercises together or do we connect with other people?
Like in the, like it, when we're teaching or when we're opening up, like for temple night, like what context there?
Yeah. So what I mean, you're basically hitting what I had shared back with her was that most of the time at this point, when we're in play spaces, we're actually, at least I'm in a facilitator role, if not both of us. And that creates, you know, a different dynamic with the energy of the room and also with each other. Andrew and I identify as monogamish, which means that we're mostly monogamous. We do connect with other people. But in the context of us facilitating, it's a little bit different. Sometimes one of us, if the numbers are uneven when we're splitting people into tantric exercises, one of us will jump in. I don't know.
Yeah, for as facilitators, like if there is a partnered exercise, I'm not like, oh, who would I have fun pairing with for this exercise? It's like who doesn't have a partner that needs one? Like that's basically what I'm thinking. And so how can I ensure that the folks that are here are getting the most out of their experience and learning the most and feeling included? And then even when we're not facilitating, if we're at play parties that we're not hosting,
which has only been one, which was our first date, actually.
Is that true? No, we've been to other stuff since then. That's been like group stuff.
I mean, technically we went to Liquid Love, but that wasn't really sexy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's it though. I think that's the only play the, and so for our first date, Andrew and I's first date was a play party. We were going with a group of friends. It ended up just being us, kind of a whole other story, which is on other episodes of the podcast. but we hadn't even kissed yet. So there was one exercise at the beginning of the opening play party that required a group of three. So it was me, Andrew, and some random fella. And that was it.
I think the essence of what I'm trying to get at anyway is like, at least for me, after like the umpteenth kind of group party, kind of, it's just another Tuesday. It loses its, I think this is just part of novelty. The human. Yeah, yeah. It loses its novelty. It becomes mundane.
It has still not become mundane for me. And I think that that's probably because of my dedication to the work and like my love for it. And like, it's not, I think that, and maybe this is true for you, maybe it isn't, but when you first get into these play spaces, for me, it was like, oh wow, there's all these things that could happen I could do. And that's exciting and yummy. And like, ooh. And then now it's evolved into like celebrating other people in that newness and celebrating other people in their desires coming to fruition and celebrating other people in their breakthroughs and in their realizations and stuff like that.
Yeah. And so it's no longer about me. And so it's just fundamentally less interesting.
We spoke more into like the structured exercises, but you know, at our play parties and retreats and things like that, we have interacted with other people separately and together. Mm-hmm. And I think that generally speaking, our agreement is if there is an opportunity for us to connect with someone else in an unstructured exercise, we really just check in with each other before. And we also have a little bit of a check-in before the event to feel into like, how are we doing in our relationship? Let's make sure that before we go into this play party or this play experience, that we both feel super nourished in our relationship. I've learned the hard way that for me to feel like I can be in compersion and in celebration of Andrew connecting with someone else, I need to feel nourished for myself. I need to feel like I've slept well and I've eaten enough food and I'm emotionally stable. And I also need to feel nourished in the relationship. I need to feel that our connection is like feeling really strong and good before Andrew goes and connects with someone else.
Yep.
And then I will also say, you know, in regards to couples at our retreats, we encourage couples to get really clear on what their desires and boundaries are together before stepping into the space, because we're not really policing couples to make sure that they're upholding the agreements that they have together. And we also invite couples to actually split up and to explore, you know, connecting with other people, because it's such a unique and special experience to be in a container, whether it be a retreat or a play party, where you're in a space with a bunch of individuals that are of the same mindset and are equally committed to this like tantric way of being, this like higher love. And any exercise or thing that you could do with your partner or that you might be learning in the retreat environment or in the play party environment, all of that you can do at home with your partner. So why not maximize the opportunity to actually connect with other people within the boundaries of your relationship?
Yeah, we're not talking like we just have to smash everybody at the event here. It can be
eye gazing,
or there's so many just sensual exercises which aren't even really sexual, which could be in the bounds.
Yeah, but they could even be platonic in a way. A lot of tantric exercises can be as platonic or as erotic as you desire them to be. So the invitation is to feel into what that energetic boundary is with your partner, and then adapt an exercise to someone outside of your relationship in a way.
I hope we have sufficiently answered this question.
I think we have. All right. All right, folks, this feels like a good stopping point. We had so many questions and so much to say in each of our answers that I've actually decided to split this podcast into two. So thank you for listening to part one of this Q&A. Part two will be coming soon, so stay tuned. Thanks for tuning in and opening yourself up to the ideas of sacred sexuality and divine love and partnership and all those juicy things that we talked about in this episode. We'll catch you next week on Talk Tantra to Me. Ta-ta.